והיינו עם אדוני אלוהינו עלינו מעשה ידינו כנמי, עלינו מעשה ידינו כנמי הוא. רבי יצחק אמר, כל ברנש דאית לי הולכה בצדיק, ילית לחי ארץ כמו דיטיב בימך כולם צדיקים בגמר, לחי צדיק חסיד יקרא אמר דוד, בתר דבחי, אתר אחיד נא, חסיד אני, ובכך שמרה נפשי להתקשרה בך. Rabbi Yitzhak said, everyone who has a portion in the righteous, namely who guards his covenant, inherits this land, that is Malchut, as it is said. Your people shall also be all righteous, they shall inherit the land forever. And this righteous, which is Yesod, is called pious, since he bestows chassidim. That is why David said, since I am linked and holding on to that place, unto the righteous, therefore I am pious. And because of this, preserve my soul, that it be bound up with you. Before we go into the 72 names, which is the subject for tonight, I want to remind you and talk to you about a kavanah and a meditation and a unification that the Ari, Rabbi Isaac Luria, suggests we do during the three-week period. Three-week period runs from the 17th of Tammuz to the 9th of Av. Tisha B'Av you may have heard of. The 17th of Tammuz, most Jewish people are not aware that it's a fast day. And most people are not really aware of the three-week period being a negative period. Now, what does it mean to be negative? If we visualize the electricity in the house as the light, then if I plug in a light bulb, there's no suffering to that. It's revelation. I see light. If I plug in a refrigerator, there's no problem. It gets cold because that's what it's designed to do. But if I plug in a 220-volt air conditioner, I have pain. I have an air conditioner that's not working properly. If I plug my finger into it, I get pain. If the vessel is not ready for the revelation of the light, it's painful. It's chaos. It's life as we know it, because the vessels are not ready for the energy. During the month of Tammuz and the month of Av, which is when these 3 weeks occur, the month of Tammuz is connected to the moon, and the month of Av is connected to the sun, meaning those are the planets that have control during these months. All of the other months of the Jewish calendar, the planet energy is divided into 2 months. Nisan is controlled by Mars, but it's also in Cheshvan. Gemini takes Sivan, but also Elul. All of the other months, the energy of the planet is shared with 2 months, except for Tammuz, which is controlled by the moon, and Av, which is controlled by the sun. So the essence of this period is an amazing revelation of light, an amazing amount of energy. But because most of us are not able to handle that much energy, it's chaos. It becomes craziness. The Kabbalah Center, when it first started back in the, I don't want to say first started, it started in 1922 by Rabbi Ashlag in Israel. But when Rabbi Berg started studying Kabbalah around 67 to 73, one of the things that they tried to do to interest people was to look at it and keep statistics. And they started to keep statistics about different Hebrew months, what occurred in them, and how they reacted so that they could explain it to people from a rational standpoint, not just because we say so. And one of the things that we have a recommendation from the sages is stay away from natural bodies of water during the three-week period. Why? there are reasons having to do with what water represents and the energy involved and so forth. But they kept statistics and they determined that the frequency of accidents around boating and oceans and things of that nature, recreational water sports, was significantly increased in that 3-week period. I don't have the statistics, I never, you know, but it just goes to show you what they were saying. This 3 weeks of energy, what the Ari tells us to do is veil the energy of Hashem in the Amidah. Now, if you say the Amidah 3 times a day, do it 3 times. If you say the Amidah once a day, just do it the 1 time. If you don't say the Amidah, do this meditation that we're going to go over once a day. The idea behind it is to veil the energy so it's balanced in this 3-week period, when for most people, they can't handle the energy. And the way we do that, and I'm going to go through it quickly because we have a lot of other things to talk about tonight. I go until I'm through with covering the subject, so I, you know, the only thing I worry about is whether I'm abusing his, you know, his use of the home. So, but we do have a lot to discuss tonight, so.
I recommend any old four.
I'm
checking myself.
Thanks to you.
I didn't schedule myself that well today. Hi.
Hi.
Do you remember everybody?
Yeah, I
don't
remember from today.
I'm Allie. I'm
Logan.
I'm sorry.
Bob's not with us right now.
And you're
okay.
Allie?
Yes.
Okay. We're talking about the 3-week period from the 17th of Tammuz to the 9th of Adar. Yes. I have many. It starts Wednesday night, tomorrow night.
Yeah.
And
I'm going to go back in my cave.
Welcome.
Well, that's very terrible of you.
Thank you.
You guys look like...
Yeah, I think we're fine.
Oh, I forgot to welcome you.
Thank you. This is a unification from the RE that it's recommended that we do at least once a day during the 3 weeks, and primarily to veil the light of God, because it's too much energy for most of us to handle based on our actions and our too much energy for the vessels. And the way it's done is these first 4 Hebrew sequences are ways of substituting. There are 7, there's really 10 major ways that the Hebrew letters are substituted. These are the most, 3 of them of the most used, of probably the first 5. These are the first 3. And essentially what it amounts to is, in a sequence of a line, as you see, the first line is the Aleph to Tav in its normal order. If you go 1 letter to the right, the Aleph becomes a Tav, the Bet becomes an Aleph, the Gimel becomes a Bet, the Hey, the Dalet becomes a Gimel, the Hey becomes a Dalet, and so forth until you get to the Tav, which becomes a Shin. So literally we just move 1 letter to the right. Another way of doing letter substitutions, and literally I want to reinforce, whenever you say a Hebrew sentence, you're also saying these letter substitutions, whether you know it or not. Whenever you say a Hebrew sentence, you say a Hebrew word, if you say a shin, you're also spelling shin yud nun, the full spelling of it. In English, it's like saying every time we see a letter C, we're also seeing 2 E's, C-E-E, the full spelling of the letter. In Hebrew, that's very real. When you say the like echad in the Shema, the last word of the Shema, the Sephardim will end at, they lengthen the dal. We, both Ashkenazim and Sephardim lengthen the dalad. They'll say echad. They end it with a T because dalad is spelled with the last letter in the full spelling of dalad is a tav. So it's that same idea. Every letter that you say has a full spelling. So there's all kinds of sequences taking place whenever someone is speaking Hebrew. And that's why you'll have some religious people, and especially in the late, around the first part of the 1900s, as Hebrew was starting to be resurrected, that the religious people said, you can't you do that. You can't use Hebrew to speak mundane things. And their reasons were, while they said it's kadosh and it's holiness, and this is the reason, Kabbalistically, the reason that it's not recommended is because of the idea of the sequences that you're saying that you don't know. Now, we live in a world where people speak Hebrew in Israel, and they speak Hebrew as a normal, everyday language, and they're going to talk mundane things. Nobody's saying that that's wrong. What we're saying is that that happens. Those sequences also take place. Getting back to the meditation. One way is to move one letter to the right. Another way is to move one letter to the left. So in that case, the aleph becomes a bet. The bet becomes a gimel. The gimel becomes a dalet, and so forth until the last letter, the ta, becomes another aleph. And then the third way is called the atbash, from the way the letters are substituted. And essentially what that's doing is saying the aleph is the first letter of the alphabet. We're going to substitute the last letter of the alphabet, which is the ta. The bet, which is the second letter of the alphabet, we're going to substitute the shin, because that's the second to the last letter. The gimel, we're going to substitute the resh. The dalet, we're going to substitute the kuf, and so forth. Essentially, if I have the tenth letter of the alphabet, I'm substituting the letter that's the tenth from the last. And essentially, it reverses itself. And that's called the central column. But during the Amidah, we have the first three blessings. Baruch Ata Hashem, and then we have Abraham, and we have different blessings right at the beginning of the Amidah. When you say Yudke Vavke, you see Yudke Vavke, you say Adonai. What the Ari is recommending is that you don't see the Yudke Vavke, but try and visualize this sequence, which is one letter to the right, Tet Dalet Hey Dalet. That's for the first blessing. The second blessing, you go one letter to the left. Don't see the Yud Hey Vav Hey. See Kaf Vav Zayin Vav. And the third blessing, see Mem Tzadi Pei Tzadi instead of the Yud Kei Vav Kei. Literally, you're looking at a page in a Siddur, or you're looking at this page. Don't see the Yudke Vavke, it's too much energy. See this sequence, the various sequences I've just talked about, Tet Dalet, Hey Dalet, Kaf Vav, Zayin Vav, and Mem Tzadi Pei Tzadi. Those are names of God. They have they don't have as much energy as the Yudke Vavke, but they're part of attributes of God. They're attributes of the light. So they're useful in veiling, because we're not looking at the Yud Kei Vav Kei directly. It's veiling the energy so that we can handle it during this period.
The last one, the Mentati, where do they live the Mentati?
The Yud is the tenth letter. If we go 10 letters from the back,
okay,
it becomes a Mem. I'm not ready to accept that statement as true.
Okay.
The reason that there are not an odd number of letters is not because we're lucky that it's even. The reason there's not an odd number of letters is that it's not supposed to be. The energies that are that were created were only the 22. And actually, there's a discussion that there will be a 23rd letter revealed when Mashiach comes, because we have 23 chromosomes in our body, 46. So there's 23 pairs of chromosomes, and there needs to be an understanding of why there are 23. And it could be the 22 letters plus a kolel, or it could be that there's going to be a 23rd letter. But right now we have the 22.
Since it doesn't digress too far, was there a particular context for the question about the 23rd letter, or some sort of an abstract question?
You made the comment about odd versus
right. Even.
That's where it comes
from. Okay.
That's
right. Okay. The 23rd chromosome.
Okay. On page 2, there's... I need to give you some background information to understand the unification and meditation for the fourth and fifth change in the Amidah. Essentially, Tet Dalet He Dalet has a gematria, which is different than the Yudke Vavke, obviously. The letters have a different numbering, different gematria. So that's 22. Chaf Vav Zayin Vav is 39. And Mem Tzadi Pei Tzadi is 300. That totals 361. Whenever you say a shin, you are also saying yud and nun sofit, which is a total of 360. There's a concept in Kabbalah called a kolel. And essentially what a kolel means is a unification. You add one to the gematria. And there are specific rules for it. It's not just made up. But sometimes people get a sense that it's 350, so we can call it 351 because we want to. The rules are very clear and very specific and very detailed. Whenever you say a shin, you're saying 360. You're also saying 361 because the shin in and of itself is a unification, has a kolel. So these three names, whatever you say them, you're also saying the idea of a shin. Now, the idea of a shin is made from three vavs. It's made from right, left, and central. If you may look at our bodies, we have a right arm, we have a left arm, and we have our body. We have one body composed of three parts, right, left, and central. That's what the shin represents in one of its aspects. Now, the gematria of the word retzeh, and in this case these letters are in wrong order, but retzeh has a gematria of 295. When we add the gematria of Elohim fully spelled out, the gematria of Elohim fully spelled out is also 295. When you add Adonai, which is a gematria of 65, you have the value of the shin at 360. So whenever you say the word Elohim, you're saying 295. If you think Adonai when you say Elohim, you're creating a shin. With that in mind, we're going to take, in the Amidah, there's a word retzeh. And at that point, retzeh means desire, will of desire. And it's the same letters as the word tzarah, which means problems or troubles. And in a period of chaos, you have problems and troubles. But because when we say the retzeh and we think about Elohim, we're making a shin, we're trying to use the balance that's built into the shin, we can transform our problems into desires, into opportunities. And that's the meditation when you say the word retzeh during the Amidah, during this 3-week period. You're transforming your problems into opportunities. You're bringing balance into your life through the shin. Which then brings us to the fifth meditation, which is at the time we say the word Sim Shalom, which means grant peace. And the two words Sim Shalom have a gematria of 726. And if you turn over to page 3, 726 is equal to two shins, 360 and 360 is 720, two shins. You'll notice the word Sim Shalom starts with, each word starts with a shin. So there's two shins. Now what's the difference between 720 and 726 is the six names that we utilized during the Amidah. We had the Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei, the Aleph Dalet Nun Yud, Adonai, Elohim, the three letter substitution names, Tet Dalet He Dalet, Kaf Vav Zayin Vav, Mem Tzadi Pei Tzadi. We're adding one for each of those names to the two shins to get to the gematria of 726. Because of this unification, and utilizing the what is the essence of the shins and the names of God in a balanced way, we're bringing balance and shalom, peace, into the world. By going through this meditation, by going through this unification, we veil the light of God, the energy that's in the Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei, that we can't handle during this three-week period, and bring it to a level that brings balance where we can handle it. I know that's a lot of not understood. A lot of things I've said is not clearly understood. It took me, I don't think I even understand these unifications clearly now after 15 years. All I can say is while I'm not calling this a tool, because this isn't available, shouldn't be used every day of the year, that during this 3 weeks period, I have experienced personally where there's so much chaos around me, the people, and it's already starting. I don't know if you've noticed it, but it's already starting. There's so much chaos around us that when I've done this, I've noticed this distinct difference where my life seems to be less chaotic than the people around me during these 3 weeks. And that's why I suggest that you do it, and that's why I brought it into the class, so that you have it available to you.
In this case, on a personal level, or is more on a global level, for political events, or...
Always. All of it is true. Because what's on the micro level is always on the macro. There's no distinction, except we see a distinction. Mm-hmm. But what is micro and macro are always in unity. So the energy being too much to handle is too much for the world to handle. It's too much for me to handle personally. It's always in the micro and the macro. We see in our physical world, we see it separated, but it isn't. Do you remember my first... the first statement I ever made. Never believe a word that I say. And you have to decide, are you a person who has to see it to believe it, or believe it in order to see it? Whichever way I wrote it the last time. Let me pass out. I'm going to change subjects unless you want to continue talking about this.
What is the analogy
that
you asked
to begin
with that section to
unplug that? If you use the electricity of the house as a mashal, yeah. Plenty.
Actually, I don't want to do that.
I'm going to start talking to you about the book of Shemot. In the Torah, the book of Shemot is called in English Exodus. And the reason for that is clearly the book of Shemot talks about the Exodus. It describes the redemption. It describes the 10th plague, the leaving of Egypt, it describes the giving of the Torah. It describes the building of the Mishkan. But it starts out in the first verse in Exodus. It describes the 12 sons of Jacob by name. And it starts, these are the names of Jacob's sons, Reuben, Simon, Levi, etc. And we have a tradition that says there is no wasted letter in the Torah. There's no extra letter. There's no letter that's missing. And it could have just as easily have said, these are we don't need to know the names of Jacob's sons at that point, because a few chapters earlier, he describes the birth. And right after that, we're told the blessings, just before Jacob dies, we're told the names of his sons and the blessings that he gave them. So why do we again have to be told their names? And the reason we're told their names is because the idea of Shemot is names. The word Shemot means names. Now, on one level, it's the names of the sons of Jacob. On another level, in the book of Shemot, is three verses. Chapter 14, verses 19, 20, and 21. And you have them here. These three verses are unique. They're the only time in the written Torah that you have three verses in a row with 72 letters each. You never have that anywhere else in the Torah. Now, I'm going to kind of describe where this occurs in the storyline. We've just left Egypt for 3 days. We have a cloud of glory that leads us during the day, and a pillar of fire that leads us at night. Then we've just encamped on the edge of the Yam Suf. Now, the translation of the Yam Suf is a corruption and has been forever. We've always translated it as the Red Sea or the Reed Sea. But let's look at it. Man speaks Hebrew. Yam is sea. Mm-hmm. Suf. Suf.
Suf could be Suf, like end.
The end. It's the end of the sea. Or the sea end. We don't know what Yam Suf really means.
It's not Sea of Reeds?
It's not Sea of Reeds. It's total corruption. Yam Suf is essentially the end of the sea, or this, whatever it means. Because remember, we're talking about the end Sof. Suf and Sof are the same word, same spelling. So the end Sof is endless. Yam Sea represents an idea of energy in an unusual interpretation of it. So I don't want to get bogged down with that idea, but we're right at the edge of this Yam Suf. And all of a sudden the camp hears somebody's coming in to tell us that Pharaoh has come behind us. And Pharaoh is coming to kill us. And Pharaoh is coming to take us back to slavery. And what happens? The pillar of fire, which is leading us as night has come, picks itself up and goes to the back of the camp and separates Pharaoh from the camp of the Israelites. So we're all standing next to the Yam Suf with the pillar of fire protecting us. And in front of us is the ocean, the sea that we're going to drown. That's at least what people are saying. That's what we see in the physical world. You have the sea in front of you, and you have the Egyptians behind you. We have a world where we don't know what to do. We have our physical world, because we rarely know what to do. And what do we do when we don't know what to do? What is the natural human thing to do?
Hesitate.
What else do we do?
Pray.
What do? We cry to God. We call to God, help us. And that's what the Israelites did. They cried to God in verse 15 of chapter 14 of Shemot. Sitting at this point in time, The Israelites cried to God, "Help us, save us." And what is God's answer? Mati tzakalai. You want to translate that?
Why do you scream at me?
Why are you crying to me? Who else are we going to cry to? Who else are we going to ask? Mati tzakalai. You don't know what to do. God's answer is Mati tzakalai, move forward. Why are you crying to me? Move forward. Go into the sea. What the Kabbalists tell us, what the Zohar tells us, is we have the tools. In these three verses, we have the physical control of the physical world. The Zohar explains to us how that gets created, and so I'm going to tell you, ask you to turn to page 8.
I'm going to jump down. I'm sorry, everybody, for being in town, but I want to bring in some of your energy tonight, but there you go.
Understood.
Thank you.
Not a problem.
You know, that's out of order. So
it's the last page. Yeah, it's the last page. I put page 8 out of order. No, page 8 is... Page 8 is the...
Philip, can you close for a moment?
Sure.
So how did we get the name the Red Sea? Or what did it come from?
I don't know. I never heard an explanation as to why it was translated as the Red Sea. What is the word for red in Adam?
Well, really, I thought maybe because it's like a bloody sea.
Yeah. It could be any of those kinds of connections, but I've never heard an explanation. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Have a nice week, everybody.
You too.
Thank you, guys. And yeah, so I'm going to need to rest with me before I leave, okay?
Sure.
You too.
While we're waiting, it's just essentially these boxes are made from the three verses. By taking the first letter of each verse, the first letter, and putting it from right to left to the bottom, the first verse. The third verse the same way. The second verse is done from bottom to top, left to right, in reverse. And that's what the Zohar tells us to do, tells us that it forms the 72 names. It's the fourth tool I'm giving you, to be used as often as you want every day. Ready?
Yes.
So the chart that you're looking at...
I've also offered you milk.
Oh, that's good, thank you.
The chart that you're looking at is essentially the fourth tool that could be utilized to help us change from the desire to receive for oneself alone into the desire to receive in order to share. And in this process, the way that it's done is at least once a day, more often as you wish, go scan, read the names, but you don't say the names. You read them, Vav, Hey, Vav, and so forth. But you start at the top, right to left, top to bottom. As you do that, I don't have the time to say the names, the names of the letters, so I just scan it. As I scan it, certain names, and it changes from one day to the next, certain names will pop at me. They'll pop out at me. I'll notice them more than other names. What that's telling me is those names are what I need that day. And it will be different from one day to the next. Well, some weeks I'll see the same name every day, but I'll see other names differently every day. Some names, some weeks I need everything. The one thing that I will, as we start to go into the details of the names, I will caution you. If we take a picture of something, we take a camera and we look through the lens of the camera, and we're taking a picture of the of out there, and it's fuzzy, it's blurry, it's not in focus. And we start to change the focus, to bring it into focus on something. The person standing in front of us, the flowers that are 20 feet away, whatever. As we start to focus, what is happening is we're bringing the focus into something. But as we focus, we're losing the totality of the picture. We can see the forest, or we can see the tree. But it's difficult to see the tree in the forest. The lens, if we look at it, the physical aspect of the lens, the way that light is bent, as we focus on details, we lose the big picture. If you focus on one specific name, I need love. Heyayayan, second row, fourth or fifth box. Heyayayan is the name for unconditional love. I want to be loved. I'm lacking love in my life. Let's focus on Heyayayan. I have to always remember, when I'm focusing, I'm losing everything else. So we strongly recommend that you always, even when you focus on one name, always look at all of the names. Because we really don't know what energy it is we need. Always look at everything. As we'll talk tonight more about different names, but always recognize as we focused on the one, it's part of a whole. Tradition says that Moshe used this sequence, these sequences, to part the Red Sea. Tradition has it that when Moshe killed the Egyptian, he used a specific one of these, the top row, the left box, Kafei Taf. Tradition has it, at each of the miracles, Moshe Aaron had to reach out the staff and do something. On the staff was written, according to the Midrashim, these 72 names. This is the potential for control of the physical world. We have the tools. The Torah gives us everything once we start to understand it. When God says Matitzach Alai, he's saying, you have the tools. Do your action. And then the verse says, and God brought an east wind and did some other stuff, but essentially what it's saying, you have to do something. Once you start, God will come and help. But we are in a world of action. We have to do the action. Part of that action is scanning or reading these names.
But you're saying that at that time, not only Moses and Aaron knew about the names. I thought it was just the two of them.
And the 70 elders as well. All of this information that I'm giving you was available throughout the Jewish sages. The Sanhedrin.
In the time of Moses.
Correct.
Yeah.
But there was a Sanhedrin that started at the time of Moses. It started in the desert.
Yeah.
Moses gave certain level of energy of himself to 70 people. Actually, 72. Two were in camp, and 70 were considered elders. And they all prophesized. So that was the essence.
How would you describe the energy or process in scanning these names? What happens when you do that?
It's easier for me to answer that question by saying I don't know.
Okay.
I can give you some thoughts on it, but that's not the point of it. The point is, for me, they work. Will they work for you? We're going to talk about what the requirements is for it to work for you. But let's get into the names a little bit before we do that.
So, for example, in this sequence, there are some verbs that if you master them, you can actually kill another person, like Moses killed the Egyptian.
Yes, but if you'll notice that we can kill another person without using these words. It's called Lashon Hara. I can defame a person's reputation. It's the same as killing him. God forbid.
Mm, but it's a metaphor. But I'm saying physically, like, there is an evil person.
What it says in the Torah is Moses looked left and right. And the explanation of that is he looked into the past of the man, and he looked into the future of the man, and saw that there was no good from this man, and therefore he killed him. And the Ari explains that that man was a reincarnation of the Nefesh of Cain, and Moses was a reincarnation of of all three levels of Abel. Since Cain killed Abel, to bring the world into balance, Abel has to kill Cain, and that's what that man represented. Mm-hmm. But before Moses killed him, our tradition teaches that he looked left and right. The Torah says it, but tradition explains that he looked into the past and saw that he never did a good deed. And he looked into the future and saw that there would be no children who would do good deeds. And therefore he was supposed to kill him. And yes, there is energy to kill. But there's also energy to love. There's also every aspect between. As we go into some of these names, you'll begin to get a sense for that. I've mentioned the first box, Vav Hei Vav, before. Every Friday night we say, Vayahulu Hashemayim V'Haaretz. The first letter of those three words is Vav Hei Vav. Vav Hei Vav, if you look on page 4, is time travel. Essentially, we go back to the moment of the first Shabbat, the moment of creation. Every Friday night, when we say Vayahulu Hashemayim V'aretz, we are connecting with the energy of creation. We're going back in time. We discussed the last couple of weeks that time is the distance between cause and effect. We go back to that point in time when everything is created, when everything is perfect. And we can then bring that energy that we need for the next week back into our life. Number 5, the fifth box in the first row, Mem He Shin, is the energy of healing. What does healing represent? It doesn't just represent healing of the body. It's healing of the soul. It's healing of your businesses. It's healing of your relationships. Healing. Anything that looks like it's not healthy in any aspect of your life can be dealt with Mem He Shin. Aleph Lamed Dalet, number 10. That's the second row, the second box. Aleph Lamed Dalet is looks can kill. Well, what am I really? Do I really want to kill anybody? What I want to do is have protection from people who can hurt me with their looks. Evil eye is a very real energy. When people are jealous of something I have, they're stealing my energy. They're taking my energy. I need protection from that. That's what the Aleph Lamed Dalet represents.
Does it represent a sequence of words as does the first box?
Yes, but I'm not... I didn't give you all of the details. Box number 18, Kaf Lamed Yud. What is fertility? It isn't just having babies. It's the germination of a new business, of a new idea, of a new relationship. What I'm stressing with this is don't just look at or use the quick English terms that have been given to these names. This is just one aspect of each name. There's at least 70 aspects of each of these names. Broaden your thoughts, broaden your exposure, broaden your understanding, but utilize the tool. Sure.
If you want to pronounce these names, there's no vowel. What do you use?
This gentleman speaks Hebrew. if he looks at that, he knows the vowels to use. The fifth name, Mem-Heh-Shin, is frequently pronounced Mahash. Don't say it. I'm saying it in the frame of teaching as an explanation. Okay? Mahash, those same letters spell the name Moshe in a different order. Those same letters spell the name Hashem in a different order. The essence of the sequence of letters in this order is healing. If you say Mahash, you may not have the vessel to handle the energy of healing in every aspect of your life. And if you bring energy into your life that you don't have the vessel for, another word for that is chaos. And Kabbalah is not about creating chaos, it's removing it. So we recommend you don't say the name out loud.
Oh, sorry, thank you. No.
Would we suggest to say, please help yourself?
Yeah.
You have nothing to drink.
I'm fine, really fine.
Okay.
Number 32, memories. Vav Shin Resh. Vav Shin Resh is the same gematria. The 32 is the fourth row, the last box. Vav Shin Resh is the same gematria as the first sequence of the Anah B'Koach. Aleph Bet Gimel Yud Tav Tzadi has a gematria of 506, which is what this is. In our meditation of the Anah B'Koach, we talk about Vav Shin Resh. We talk about memories. What are memories? It's not that we're remembering the past, but we're cleansing the past. We're using the memory of our connection to God in the Ein Sof. Don't limit yourself with these names. Expand them. What I'm talking about is just my thoughts after 10 or so years of doing this. Always expand, because that's the essence of the light. Sharing is to expand. It's to share energy and move forward. That's the idea. Don't cry to God. Move forward.
Interesting that you ever listened to Tony Robbins.
I haven't, but you've mentioned it a few times.
He's a well-known motivational speaker. And one of his claims is when you take action, heaven and earth will with you.
Not only is that his claim, but it's from the Zohar. In a paraphrased way.
If you take action, then heaven and earth is with you.
You do the action, and then God comes and does everything else. You start, and then the action is completed by God. The sequence of the cassette that we live in gets manifested. Number 37, Aleph Nun Yud. It's one of the few of the names that actually spell a word in Hebrew. The word is Ami, I. What is the big picture? It's not I. The big picture is every one of us. So when I have myself, when I have a me, when I've got focused on me, I'm limiting the big picture. The Ani in this sequence is designed to let us expand our consciousness to the totality and not just the I, not just our own ego.
What about the one after Ani?
Circuitry. Chet Dayan Mem Sofia.
What is the first letter?
I'm sorry?
Is it a Zayin?
No, it's a Chet and a Nayim.
Oh, okay.
The font is not one of the better ones.
Yeah, I thought it's still Zayin.
That's the Torah font.
No, the Torah font has crowns on them. This is just a particular font that I happen to be using.
They have crowns on them.
In the box,
should be like this.
Here they are, but not on the page.
That's what I mean.
Yes.
This is the confusing stuff, because it's The two vows are the little circle points.
No, actually, a chet is made by a vav and a zayin with a little house.
It's a put together of two letters.
Right, well, that's what I thought. It's a preference.
The chet is actually perfecting the vav and the zayin. The vav is represents heaven. The zayin represents the physical world, and the chet represents the spiritual world above the heaven. And it's essentially the perfection of and the unification of the two. But that's a whole different discussion about what each letter represents. But the idea of what is circuitry. Circuitry is when I'm sharing and the person who's receiving my sharing is also sharing by receiving. An example of that is if my mother is a lousy cook. When I go to visit my mother, she's passed already, but when I did go to visit my mother and she would bake a cake, I didn't want to eat it. But if I had left without tasting it, I was really causing her pain. So my mother is giving me the cake, which I don't want, but because I eat it, I'm sharing the you know, she feels good by my eating it, so that's what I'm sharing with her, even though it's not something I want. That's a circuitry of energy. What you share with someone is received, and by their receiving it, they're sharing back with you. That's the way we remove bread or shame in this world. We could go on and on. I think probably the last one, number 72, Mem Vav Mem, is a Hebrew word that means handicap. And what is the idea of that? Spiritual cleansing. When we're handicapped, we have a physical limitation. We have that physical limitation because of a spiritual cause, a spiritual limitation. So using that as a vaccine against physical limitation, we're really also using it as a vaccine against spiritual limitation. Now, the real question is, what is the requirement to make use of this? It's one thing just to scan it. And that's obviously a first step. But to make it manifest in your life, meaning control. Now, I'm going to give you an example of control. You're familiar with Professor Einstein, who created the E equals MC squared formula. And he essentially taught that, and which Kabbalah agrees with, he taught that if you see it, or if you don't see it, it's not there. If you see it, it becomes into manifestation. So he had been teaching this to his students, basically teaching them that if you don't see the chair doesn't exist. And he drove home, and being the absent-minded professor that he is, he'd forgotten his keys. And he gets to the door, and it's locked. Well, his theory says, if I don't see the door, if I pretend the door is not there, then I can just walk in. Except he couldn't make it work. He kept hitting the door, even though he pretended he couldn't see it. But a Mukubal had a similar instance. He drove home and had forgotten his keys. What happened? The door was locked. He utilized these names, and a locksmith drove by at that instant, let him in. Or his wife came home with the keys at that instant. What is control? It's not necessarily what we think of control. I want to control my life so that I have millions of dollars. Well, maybe I don't have the vessel to handle millions of dollars. I want to control my life so I have less chaos. I have no chaos. That's control. how that comes about, I can try and control it, micromanage it, but God's a better micromanager than me. If I try and do it, it's going to come out chaos. If I do the action and let God control it, let God do the micromanagement. He's very good at it. In order to achieve control, we have to do three things. Obviously, scanning the name is one of the things, but in addition to that, we need to have conviction in the power of the names. We have to know this to be true. If I believe it to be true, I get some of the energy, some of the control. If I know it to be true, I can get all of it. And to the degree that I know it, I get more of it. Number two, an understanding of the particular influence radiating from each name. If I use one of the names for something, I'm feeling a lack of love. I use, hey, hey, I am. If I don't know that that's the name for love, I'm not going to get as much as if I do know that it's there.
Pardon me.
Yes.
I'm just going to very briefly make some noise. I'm just warning you.
No problem.
Less than a minute.
Not a problem. And the third thing is we need to follow through any request that we have for these names to be used. We have to follow through with a physical action. What is that physical action? Sometimes it can be just giving a tzedakah, 3 coins, $18, whatever. Just the idea of following through. One, you have to know it to be true or believe it to be true. The closer you are to knowledge rather than belief, the more it will manifest. The second one is to know more about each name. There's more of each name has, as I said, each name has 70 aspects, so we can learn more and more. And the third thing is to do the physical action. It's not just enough to scan them. We have to do something in the physical world. We have to walk into the sea. The Midrash says that the leader of the tribe of Judah was the first person to walk into the sea. Nachshon ben Abinadab. It'll come back to me. I'm mispronouncing it. Nachshon walked into the sea, and the sea came up to his knees. Didn't split. He kept walking further out. It came up to his waist, and it didn't split. He kept walking further out. Came up to his neck. Didn't split. Where was he going to go? God said, why are you crying to me? He told me to move forward, but nothing's happening. I'm going to drown in this sea. What about the babies? He kept walking, and it wasn't until the water reached the tip of his nose that the water split. You have to have certainty that this will work. You have to know more, as much as you can, about the names. But most importantly, you have to do the action. We live in a world of action. We have to do the action. In every case, it's going to be a different action. Some cases, it's literally just tzedakah. In another case, it's telling somebody, I'm sorry. The actions have to be done. I'm open for questions. There's a lot of material here. Just like last week, there was a lot of material. It's all part of the system. Kabbalah is a lifetime study. What you're getting in these courses, in these classes, you're getting the tools. Start to use the tools is what we recommend. Don't believe a word I'm saying, but test it for yourself.
I'm wondering the same.
Mm-hmm.
How would I find more information about the meanings of each of these names that we need to know if we want to?
This book, this is sold at the Kabbalah Center as some of the names. There's additional as you study Kabbalah, as I study Kabbalah, there are other aspects that come to us. Thirdly, as I look at the names, what the letters represent, and how they, the sequence that they tie together. Each name is different, and one of the first revelations that I received, there's a name in there, and I forget where it is, it's Resh Yud Yud, and there's another name, Yud Yud Zion. I was on it, was listening to the Torah reading one Shabbat, and I happened to look at the sequence because where I pray they have the they call it the war room, and they literally they have a chart of the 72 names on the wall. And when you take those two names together, you have Resh Yud 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 Zion, which is essentially spelling the Raz. Resh and Zion spells the word Raz, which means secret. And the four Yuds was being read in the Torah. I forget which parasha it is. I think it was about 2 weeks ago. But in that parasha, there's a sequence of letters where the four Yuds are in a row. The Yuds are in four words that are in a row. It's a sequence of four Yuds which represents another form, an aspect of healing by itself. The secret of the four Yuds is made up in those two names. That was a revelation I had. I don't know if it's true. For me, it's truth. I'm not telling you to use it as a teaching because I don't know if it's right for you. But for me, it made sense. As soon as I understood what Resh Zion represents as secret, you know, it's really not secret so much as concealed. The four Yuds of the world are concealed. The four worlds are concealed. It's all part of that same understanding. The more you study, this is not, here's the knowledge, go use it. You need to utilize it by studying it. You need to utilize it by doing it. We live in a world of consciousness, and we live in a world of action. And our job is to unify the two. One final discussion point. If you look on page 9, which is the other chart, that chart, as Reuben can look, he looks at this and he doesn't know what it's saying because it's not words there. You know what it is? I'll shorten the discussion a little bit. That is my personal 72 name chart.
Yo.
Mine.
There's a
Chet
in every name.
There's a Chet and a Nun. A Nun, a Vav, and a Kaf Sofi. What I'm doing is mixing each of the 72 names with my personal name.
I see.
The idea is your name is your soul, is your essence. The 72 name is now being drawn into me through this chart. I sell this chart. This is an advertisement for whatever purpose. I don't really mean it as an advertisement, but just so you're aware. I will make this chart for you, but I won't do it right away because you need to be utilizing the tools in order to utilize this particular idea.
Okay.
But I want you to know that it's available.
Okay. So the 72 names that we spoke about them are incorporated
in my name.
But there are some negative names, you know? So they are part of yours as well.
I'm not aware of any name that's negative. It can be that there's too much energy for a vessel. But in and of itself, it's
not. Like the one that is the positive appeal. What is it?
Okay, let's understand. An Esther Dibrot that says, do not murder. It doesn't say, do not kill. And in the Torah, it says, go take all of the people of Korach. They got killed. Take all of the the men of Moab and kill them. there's nothing wrong with killing, because sometimes the klipah, the negativity, the shell, has to be eliminated through the method of killing. So killing is not necessarily negative. It may be that the energy from killing is too much for the vessel. The revelation of light that takes place by removing a klipah can be too much for the vessel, and then that becomes negative. Just like this three-week period of between the 17th of Tammuz and the 9th of Av is negative, not because it's really negative, but because we don't have the vessel to handle it. So, to my knowledge, the 72 names, there is no negative within them. There can be too much energy for the vessel. And that's why I'm hesitant to share, to provide the chart. Just here, go have one. You know, it's something I think the vessel has to be built, and the way it's built is by utilizing the chart, the 72 name chart. Any other questions?
Mine.